Hello,
Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to the podcast, The Portals of Knowing. My name is Karen Christine Patrick. The show is about cultivating the knowing, that inner knowing, and the human experience. And today on my show, I'm going to be talking in the next couple of podcasts to speakers at conferences that I'm going to be at, because I'm going to be at a number of conferences in the fall that I'm super excited about. One is the Mars Anomaly Conference, which is the Mars Anomaly Research Society Conference 7th Annual. It's going to be in my town, Silver City, New Mexico, through the 9th. And if you want more information about this conference, go to MarsAnomalyConference.com. My first guest is Brett Colin Shepard, who is really special to me because he's my research and life partner. We live together in Silver City with our family and a couple of dogs. We have a lot of fun. It's beautiful here. And he will be talking about, well, his topic title when at the conference will be Listening to Mars. This is a description of the talk. In 1924, scientists used a radio telescope developed by Nikola Tesla to listen to Mars as it passed closest to Earth in many years. What happened is little known and remarkable because apparently humanity established contact with beings on another planet, the planet Mars. Brett has studied this case of graphic communication and other examples as well. So that's going to be amazing. And let me give you a little bit about Brett's background. Brett Colin Shepard experienced a time anomaly where his lunar anomaly finds from the future were shown to him in an art class at his high school. Whoever did this time mission also knew that Brett has a photographic memory. Years later, he feels compelled to pursue looking for anomalies in NASA images of the Moon and Mars. He is known in the anomaly community for some of his finds, the Lunar Acropolis and the Jupiter 2 UFO on Mars, and the Lion of Cydonia. Brett is writing his book on his anomaly finds, plus what he found deconstructing the manipulation of photos from space by our space agencies, a.k.a. NASA, right? His current book is called Flyover Tchaikovsky Crater, about the base on the moon seen by Ken Johnston Sr., NASA whistleblower, and he has a new book, I have it right here by me, it's called Digital Moon, published in August of 2017, and it's about the processes of CGI and other methods used by NASA to obfuscate anomalies, plus Brett's extraordinary journey as an experiencer, showing the future at 15 years of age by an agency operative of the government on to found the Lunar Anomaly Research Society to reveal what he has discovered in lunar images. So I would like to welcome Brett Colin Shepard to the show. Hey, Brett.
Hi. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
It's kind of fun because we live in the same house, so you're actually in another room of the house.
Yes, I'm here.
I'll reveal that behind me. And I'll reveal that behind the scenes. But, I wanted to interview you first because you're kind of setting the tone for the conference. We're sort of calling the conference Listening to the Planets. And we're going to have an amazing group of speakers from people in the space, in the secret space program, to other experiencers. People have written just about everything you can imagine of the unusual nature of Mars and possible interactions with Mars that we've had for a really long time. But Brett, if you could give a really brief bit about your background and also talk about this case that you discovered about how we were talking to Mars at one point in 1924. Go for it.
Well, I'm very excited about this conference and talking, being able to finally talk about this particular subject, because it's so important about our human history. You know, a lot of people say they do a little analysis of where humanity came from, and one of those places was Mars. And I'm glad we left, because it's really not any better than where we left in Belen, New Mexico. So I'm glad humanity left Mars. I find it fascinating, though, that in 1924, the scientists had put together a project to use a radio telescope that is very direct. In other words, whatever you point at, that's exactly what you're listening to, is that place, that planet, or that star system. And they pointed it at Ursa Major at first, and then Mars, and they got signals from both. And they were so clear and defined, and they also got beeps, like just like Morse code or something like that. And they passed it off to the public after coming out. C.F. Jenkins came out with these findings, and also John Todd, I believe, came out with these findings of how they pointed this telescope at Mars, and they got actual readbacks that were in graphic form. So it was a sound file put in graphic form, and they were seeing pictures of literally, you know, the Martians. And they were also getting sound bites of the Martians, and they were asking questions back and forth. So it was very, very defined communication. It was first contact, as far as anyone knew, technologically. Even though there is an ancient aspect to my talk, and I'm not talking about ancient aliens or could it be or anything like that. I'm talking about the actual communication from different dimensions and such. So the ancient Rishas, for example, in East India, different gurus basically were in communication with interdimensional beings. And none of these, the perception of these communications was that it was of God or of an extraterrestrial, same thing, you know. But the thing is that these beings that are communicating with humanity ever since the beginning never called themselves God, for one thing, and never referred to themselves as extraterrestrial. So it's very enlightening and interesting to find that we have never been alone, and they've always had the capability of being right here with us dimensionally. And that's an interesting aspect to this communication, because of the time loops and the dimensions that make it possible for them to instantly be here communicating with us. You know, the ancient technology or the old technology that they used, they were experimenting with, was a radio telescope, and it was fascinating because they were actually getting communication from the third dimension, you know, pointing it directly at Mars. And these communications were very eerie. Many scientists from Yale University had collected the data and analyzed it. It was an astonishing event in actuality. Yeah, but the scientists, you know, being stuffy scientists, it falls out of the realm of science. Kind of like, you know, when Gerald Light, which isn't his real name, I witnessed the extraterrestrial meeting Eisenhower on the tarmac, and these beings were popping in and out of reality. So there's a lot that humanity really needs to wrap their heads around as far as what our world actually is and how complex it is and how we have dimensions that are right with us.
I'd like to interrupt for just a second because I want to give an observation to that. When you were talking about, you know, science, conventional scientists, this is something I've been really trying to get across to people, is that we obviously have an overt science, which is, you know, what I always call it, your PBS science, you know, and what you heard in school and what's in the university and what is, you know, not taboo to talk about. And we have a covert science, which is the stuff that, you know, I'm interested in. And, you know, I like to tell people I have a proof that there is such a thing as covert science. And that's the fact that I have we live in New Mexico. I went to a rock shop and found a tiny piece of trinitite, which is from the explosion of the first nuclear bomb where the sand got turned into glass. And somebody went and collected some, and I have a little tiny chip of that. And to me, it's proof that there was a covert science, because until they dropped that bomb over the two cities in Japan, which is very public and it's kind of hard to hide a giant bomb, you know, that whole splitting of the atom was merely rendered in regular science as theoretical. But until we actually saw the bomb and its effects, then it's no longer theatrical. Well, if there is a covert science that is not so obvious as a giant bomb, then obviously they can hide it better. And so we're not told a lot of stuff. And I wanted to also talk about how you got that bit from Yale, because there was a website called Shorty, and it's at shorty.com, and it put out a tiny strip of this, what was actually many, many hours long strip. So it looks like a seismograph. And it's the telemetry back from the radio telescope was done in a seismographic way. And so it's, you know, doing a seismographic type picture. And even those guys watching the tape roll by, we're seeing faces in it. And then you because you're brilliant, you actually were able to analyze that further and pull out the dimensional information that was going on and take that seismographic, what was radio telescope that was noise, you know, organized noise, obviously. They turned it into a tape. You reverse engineered it and actually pulled some noise out of it. And you could talk a little bit just about that.
Yes, what it was a graphic file. They were more interested in the graphic communication because of the type of device that they invented. What I did was, though, because it was related to sound, is I reversed it back into a sound file, and we could actually hear the beeps. And it's the creepiest thing you've ever heard, you know. It's very creepy, considering that was 1924 and they really didn't have anything that made that noise. You know, it makes a noise like a digital computer, you know. It's very strange. And I also did this experiment twice so that to make sure that it wasn't an artifact in the processing of reversing it. So that was very interesting in itself. And considering the time period, which people don't really, that's not in their minds, you know, that once upon a time we didn't have Photoshop or computers or anything like that. We had no satellites up in space, you know. And so, you know, one of the aspects of that I wanted to talk about is the idea of extraterrestrial. They're pointing this telescope at Mars, but we have to realize that we all the beings in our galaxy live in the same space. They don't consider any of this extraterrestrial. We're all in the same space. And yes,
yeah,
there is unity in that space, whether we like to admit it or not.
Yeah, what I'd like to say about the beeps was, as you unfolded the story, you found out that they started communicating with the beings on Mars with Morse code. And for whatever reason, Yale only put out a tiny strip of it. And I think it was to find somebody like you who could analyze it deeply as to what was this, you know, or see if, you know, where are we at? You know, I just thought it was interesting that I don't know how you would get access to the rest of the tape. We only have a report of what was on there, but you got so much out of that little snippet. And then finding out, I guess, I don't know which guy it was, but one of the guys on the team in 1924 went on to be part of the invention of the television signal. And what the key to that was interlaced signal. So really you're seeing a sound file coming through that has Morse code. You're seeing what looks to be a multiple layers of imagery on there. They're literally, by the nature of the signal, kind of like that movie Contact, it's showing an interlaced dimensional signal that they couldn't interpret back then, so they didn't have TV yet. But you pointed out in your book about how this was so similar to that signal that Carl Sagan, who was an insider. He was ostensibly a member of the Majestic 12. Most people don't know that. And then he writes this book before he dies, called Contact, which then becomes a movie. And he's trying to tell the story, basically.
Yeah, that's very interesting. The actual graphic file that they got was an interdimensional interlaced file, and it is where they got the idea for the movie Contact, about this interdimensionality within this graphic file and how many dimensions there were. There were dimensions of sound and dimensions of space and all of that, and also time. Because, you know, this strip, it was condensed. It was taken over hours of time, but was condensed into one file. So, in other words, I had to stretch it out so that it would sound normal to the human ear, you know. And the other thing is about that is that these scientists that are hard science guys, other than Carl Sagan, was really thinking about the realities of different dimensions. And how vast the communication and complex it actually is, you know. So when I look at these lunar or Mars images, I see layers and layers of complexity. And guess what? That there is no way that NASA could have put this digital information in there. Not with their rudimentary programming. So, you know, the ETs gave us the ability to do digital anything. They gave us the binary type system, the computer system. I guess it's binary. I don't know. Binary code, you know, whatever. And so they gave us this series of ones and zeros and whatever, and that could be different combinations could lay out anything, any algorithm. So at the beginning, when they were doing this digital stuff, they were fed this information on how to turn just about anything, a graphic file, a sound file, or anything, a picture, into this binary type code. And what's fascinating about that is not a human language. That is from space. This binary code were the beeps that we were hearing. These boop, 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 that sort of thing. So it's not just Morse code. It's part of the binary code. And it's fascinating that we can turn any alphabet, anything, into these digits of ones and zeros in different combinations, because there's a vast, you know, extensive, infinite number of combinations that you can do with these codes. And that was the complexity of this file that they had at Harvard, or Yale, rather. So at Yale, I went on their website, basically in their college website, and I found the other documents. One was actually signed by C.F. Jenkins, you know, the inventor of the television, and one of the inventors of the television, should I say, and also James Todd. It wasn't John Todd, it was James Todd, I believe. And this guy, they had, he was brilliant, you know, and he was starting to dig into these files, but mainstream science wouldn't let him do it. They started calling him a crazy person. And he spent the rest of his days in an asylum or something like that. So it's very interesting what they have done to corrupt, you know, actual discovery in science.
Well, the overt science definitely has done that. And
yes.
Our friend, one of the speakers, will be Andrew Bishago, and he's been saying that a lot of overt scientists are going to be really shocked when we have disclosure, because we're going to disclose all of this covert operations and science that has been going on. Just to make sure people kind of know who you are too, I want to just quickly have you talk about your book. Your website is brettcollin.com for, that's the website of Brett Collins Shepherd, and you wrote two books. We worked with Dr. Ken, well, he's not a doctor, but that's, you know, he's a religious doctor. That's a big controversy there. But his name's Ken Johnston Sr. We worked with him for 3 years, helping his get his material out, but we also had access, both you and I, to his archives significantly. And he wrote two books. Well, one book was more directly based on that, and if you could describe it real quick, which was Fly Over Chukowski Crater, and if you could just talk a minute about that, and then talk a minute about Digital Moon, which is really a magnum opus of what you've discovered about the manipulation of our, you know, everything about the moon and space. Go ahead.
Yes, I wrote Fly Over Chukowski, which was kind of a picture book, you know, based on a slideshow, regarding the research I did for Ken Johnston Sr. and the Apollo 14 event of Edgar Mitchell actually filming extraterrestrial bases in Chukowski Crater. And it goes into depth of all of the things that other people have said regarding a base on the moon. What's ridiculous is that none of our pictures actually show or reference any of that. But the eyewitness accounts of the people that were actually there, every single one of them just about, say that there was an event of some sort, or that they had seen literally with their own eyes bases on the moon. And Digital Moon is about my journey all the way from 15 years old till now, founding the Lunar Anomaly Research Society and the strange events involving the digital images that were shown to me when I was 15 of the moon and Mars. And also, you know, regarding image analysis of those particular images. And I went very deep into analyzing the actual process of the digital images, so that people can understand that that our perception had been manipulated. And mostly that's what that book is about. And some positive things at the end of the road to that are a lot of the information about perception and how human beings have the right to have their own perception. And it very much encourages that. So I have one book that I'm writing right now called Listening to the Planets, and I hope to have that out by the time we have our Mars conference.
Oh, that's great, and you'll go more in-depth in this amazing case that you're going to be presenting. And I guarantee people that they're going to hear stuff that I don't care if you've been into disclosure topics in the past. You're going to hear things at this conference literally you're not going to hear anywhere. I've made sure that the speakers that come to our conference are not just the usual suspects, but people who really have an interest to tell. And I wanted to quickly mention who our speakers are. We have Andrew Bishago, who started the Mars Anomaly Research Society. He is kind of why we're all, you know, together doing this, because he revealed his experiences as a Mars jump room participant. We have Alfred Weber, who with Andrew Bishago formed the Mars Anomaly Research Society a while back. We're going to have Brett, of course, who is both a member of the Mars Anomaly Research Society, but also founded the Lunar Anomaly Research Society. You can find all that on Facebook. And I'm an admin on there as well. And we're going to have Dr. Sasha Lesson and Janet Kira Lesson, and they we'll be talking about the ancient history of Mars as it relates to the Anunnaki and secret space program topics that, you know, they've gotten more into in the last couple of years. We're going to have Tim Huckabee, and I'll know more about him as time goes on, and we'll get an interview with him. Tony Rodriguez, who I believe is an experiencer of the secret space program going to Mars. Michael Reinhardt is the one who got the Mars Anomaly conferences going, and we'll have the sort of the early people who kept that conference going until it built up bigger, and that was Patricia Bullock and Ross Curley. We're going to have Fernando Vosa, and he's an amazing guy on many topics. He really gets into, like, if we were going to live on Mars, how would we do that? We been researching free energy and all kinds of things like that related to how it's possible to live on Mars. And others. Oh, Carla Friedrich is going to be there. She's kind of been helping us organize. It's her fault we're here in Silver City. She's helping us organize the conference. Brett, is there anything else on your mind, Sora?
No, that's about what I wanted to say about it. So far, I don't want to give it all away, and I really look forward to the Mars conference. It's the 7th annual Mars conference in Silver City, and I'm real excited about all that and getting some of this information out. I'm not holding back. I don't believe in soft disclosure, or I don't really believe in disclosure at all. I think everything is right in front of our face. So, you know, I'm really excited about that, and I hope to see everybody there. And thank you for letting me talk on it.
Thank you so much, Brett, and we're going to be talking to the other speakers, and I appreciate the time you took with us today. Thank you. Brett and I have, he has his website again, brettcollin.com. My website is KC, or Kilo Charlie, Kilo Charlie Patrick, kcpatrick.com. We have a shared website, portalsofknowing.com, which will have these podcasts on it and many other interesting resources for people. We've been doing research for quite a number of years in a bunch of different topics, and we will be glad to, you know, make sure people have all kinds of research ideas and resources that may not have even known about that we were excited to find over the years as we research things. The conference will be at the historic Murray Hotel in downtown Silver City, New Mexico. Silver City is in, people ask me, where is it? Well, it's if you go off Highway 10 and you go north, at the exit to Deming, New Mexico, and just keep going, you'll run into our little town. It's been here since the 1800s as a mining town, kind of famous for Billy the Kid living here with his mom. And one of the things that they did is make an edict years ago that new buildings and official buildings would have to be built out of stone. So it's still here. And it's an amazing place. It has all kinds of amazing, fun architecture. We're hoping people will not just, you know, come to the conference to walk around town and see it. It's adorable and cute. It's attracted an esoteric group of people, all kinds of art galleries. We have like over 40 art galleries. We have restaurants. We have a really cute downtown. We're right next to the Gila National Forest. That's why I love it so much. I grew up in Southwest Oregon, and it's amazing how much this High Sierra town is like that, and it tends to be warm, but not like, you know, I'm living on Mercury hot as some places are. September's pretty nice, a nice time to come, and the people are really friendly and open, and we moved here in December because of Carla. She said, you guys need to come visit, and you should probably stay, and so we visited a couple times and did conferences here and had just a great response from people. And we were going to do something called the Silver City Cosmic Days, and the Mars Anomaly people asked us to bring that conference here, so we did that, and we're excited that we're doing that. And so I hope you guys visit our town, and you can, like I said, more information, MarsAnomalyConference.com. This is Karen Christine Packett for Portals of Knowing signing off. Thank you so much for listening.